I'm Faith Middleton, and this show is about the richness of life. We're going to talk about good news when it comes to chemistry and the environment. We're going to talk about something called green chemistry. Things are getting better. Thanks for listening in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. If we were doing a reality show in my house across several years, you'd see me reading reports, then tossing all my suddenly scary nonstick pans into the garbage, followed by the plastic containers I used to use in the microwave to reheat things. These are said to be leaching poison into my food. Then the plastic bottles holding water, the water itself, all kinds of makeup in the garbage. You'd see me walking into a freshly painted room holding my breath to mitigate lung poisoning fumes. There I'd be eyeing the new carpet, wondering how long it lasts, that off-gassing that I read about. Tea bags, the cheap American-made wine, lots of chemical poison in those, they say. Forget about the chlorine in my shower water. I wonder, isn't that Japanese rice contaminated from the nuclear meltdown? I'm a goner. We're all goners, I finally concluded. But maybe, as psychologist Nancy Horn says, I'll decide to live with as little fear as possible. That's still my goal. Avoid the worst things if I can, and the massive amount of fear that we all seem to live with. That's why I'm all ears on this call-in show. Our guest, Professor Paul Anastas of Yale University, who is often referred to as the father of green chemistry, says this movement is making a difference in the environment in major, major ways. And when he started to detail some of these for me before the show, I was so enervated. It was the most thrilling news. He has good news. Is he saying big business wants to cooperate, or that we can suddenly influence things as consumers? When you read about Anastas, you hear this word obesogens tossed around, that they make us fat, that they harm our health, that we can get rid of them. Dr. Anastas has appointments across the spectrum at Yale. He has served four U.S. presidents, including President Obama. He was the man called in right after the BP Deepwater Horizon oil spill. He was called in to the nuclear meltdown in Japan the year before that. He was a very stressed out guy. And also our returning guest, a Connecticut metabolic doctor and endocrinologist, Reza Yavari. This is a treat for me, having the two of you in the studio and having a chance to have conversation. Of course, it's a call-in, so I'm thrilled for everybody who gets to do this. All right, let's get at it. So, Dr. Anastas, tell me about what green chemistry is so we can all start on the same page.
Well, first of all, thank you so much, Faith. This is a real pleasure, especially to be here with Dr. Yavari, talking about something that is just one of the most important things that I devote my life to. So green chemistry is recognizing that everything that we see, touch, and feel is a chemical. We might think of chemicals as something foreign or something that comes in bottles or something like that. But really, we are surrounded by chemicals every day. And all of us know that when we hear the word chemical, we really think toxic. And so to think about green chemistry is saying, how do we actually have all of these materials that make up the basis of our society, our economy, and everyday life in ways that isn't going to give us that toxicity? So this is a scientific field that has been around now for over two decades.
Dr. Anastas is actually, and his team, his wife, Julie Zimmerman, is also involved in this field at the engineering school at Yale, where she's a tenured professor. You are actually inventing things that are altering chemicals in such a way that they are not considered dangerous to us. Where do you hear some of this as we go through this hour? This is pretty remarkable. Okay, so let's tick off some areas. Things are being reinvented, you're telling me. Cosmetics.
Absolutely.
Green chemistry. What are we seeing?
So historically, cosmetics and personal care products were loaded with things to hopefully make you look beautiful, right? But it was doing it in ways that might not be the best for your health. And so there's substances in there called surfactants and preservatives and different fragrances. And instead of putting health first, they put beauty and luxury first. What's happening now is leading cosmetics companies are saying, no, we want these to be all natural, bio-based, getting away from the petroleum, getting away from those toxics. And so we're seeing whole lines, whole companies that are really focusing on green chemistry in order to achieve this.
And you're saying not in name only. They're really doing it.
They're genuinely doing this.
Where's the pressure coming from?
Well, I think that there's two things. One, people are always going to be concerned about their health, especially with things that they're slathering on their body. But two, the wonderful thing about green chemistry is it doesn't mean that something is going to perform worse, that it's not going to get the function. By doing green chemistry, you're actually making better products that function better and perform better. So part of the pressure is coming from innovation.
We're going to go through some other categories so that you can hear this good news. But a quick story, if you would. When you were in school, I don't know what age you were when this happened, and some official type said to you, no, you can't. You can't do green chemistry. What? Tell me that story.
So it was actually when I just got out of grad school and was working down at the Environmental Protection Agency, and said instead of trying to make molecules and medicines that cure problems, how about we make it so that all of our chemicals never cause problems? People said, well, that's kind of crazy because we know that these toxic chemicals are just the price we pay for our modern quality of life. This is what we need in order to have our modern products. And I thought of this wonderful quote, my favorite quote by Mark Twain, which is, it isn't the things that you don't know that get you into trouble. It's the things that you know for sure that just ain't so. And so we tried to say, how can we have all of the quality of life, all of the products of our daily life without the toxics?
And you said, of course we can do this.
Exactly.
And obviously you persisted.
Yeah, so this was launched actually by the Environmental Protection Agency back in 1991. And we started off with basic research to scientists to have them show what is possible by pursuing green chemistry. And luckily, the research and all the science has shown over the years how important it is.
Why wouldn't all fields get on board with this? When you think about the connection to lawsuits, the bad PR, just being able to sleep at night, and we could go on and on. Why wouldn't all, since this new green chemistry is available to so many, or you can fund people like you to do this kind of work, why wouldn't everyone do it?
So the great news is that there is a lot of progress happening. There is a challenge with a lack of awareness. Most people still don't know what's possible. And green chemistry is showing what is possible every day. And so the more...
Are you saying the companies don't know?
That's right. Even there are companies that don't know about it yet, that have not adopted it systematically yet. So I often say that the good news is that I can't name an industry sector that hasn't used green chemistry. The better news is that all of those achievements are probably about 10% of what's possible.
Hmm. So another area would be food packaging.
Yes. So one of the real concerns...
Wait, are you saying most cosmetics are safe, by the way? I meant to ask you that. What percentage have gotten rid of these?
It's really tough to know the exact percentage, but what I can say is some of the major cosmetics manufacturers, this is at the core of what they see as innovation.
And we're told, recently we had somebody on from a former cosmetic industry person, that really it's just a few number of companies that produce all the cosmetics anyway.
Right.
So just under different names, but it's all the same bunch of people. Okay, so food packaging.
Yeah, so food packaging, again, the history of trying to get a narrow definition of function or performance without caring about the health or the environmental impacts. Our food packaging worked to keep our food protected from the outside, but it also was loaded with these additives in the plastics. And those additives can not only be toxic, but they're among this class of substances known as endocrine disruptors. These things mimic hormones and can cause a great deal of problems. But green chemistry is reinventing plastics, packaging, for many different purposes so that you can get rid of those additives and those toxic substances.
Is green chemistry playing a role in the pharmaceutical industry? And I don't just mean in the drugs themselves, but you've pointed me to the waste from making the actual pill or dose of medicine itself.
The history of the pharmaceutical industry is one of producing often life-saving drugs, drugs that improve quality of life. But historically, it is producing a pound of drug while you're producing a ton of waste. So there was a...
Do you mean that literally?
Literally a ton of waste on average for a pound of product.
You're not talking about packaging?
Not packaging. Just the drug itself. So that is tremendously wasteful. And the nature of the waste is also of concern because that can cause biological and health issues itself. So one of the things that is really a good news story about the pharmaceutical industry and green chemistry is it was aggressively adopting green chemistry. So now most of the pharmaceutical companies have formed the Green Chemistry Pharmaceutical Roundtable, and they've dramatically decreased their waste that they produce in making the drugs.
So now that leaves the drugs themselves.
Right. And the drugs themselves have the challenge that you want them to be stable so that if they're sitting on a shelf or in a medicine cabinet, that when you take them, they are the same drug that you think they are. You don't want them to degrade or break down. The problem with that is they also don't break down if they are in the environment, whether they're flushed or thrown away or whatever. So that is still an ongoing challenge on how you make sure that the drugs in the that make their way to the drinking water.
I was thinking about side effects. You know, certainly the combination of chemicals, the recipe that these companies are using, these drugs all have, you know, what has now become a hilarious list of side effects. And so that's next, right, Reza Yavari?
Yeah, thank you for having us here. I'm a big fan of Paul's work and Paul himself, so it's a pleasure to be here. Paul and I have been focusing a lot on endocrine disruptors, the chemicals that mimic the effect of natural hormones in many different ways, and also chemicals that can cause obesity and diabetes. So that's our area of interest, at least intellectually. Maybe someday we can do research together. But as far as the chemicals, the pharmaceuticals, most of the pharmaceuticals, apart from the new class, the biologicals, these are organic chemicals or other types of chemicals that not only interact to fight disease, but they can alter physiology in the body. And some of them, as you know, with the side effects every other day, we hear a new side effect of a new drug that was not predicted, either a cancer or some kind of a metabolic dysfunction. And I think it's very important to understand that designing a chemical that would affect the body to fight disease has to be taken in the context of we also don't want to hurt the rest of the body, not just in the context of safety that FDA works on, but in terms of our inner ecology, the gut flora that we have, and our outside environment. What are we going to do with millions of tons of antidepressants and statins that are going to go into our wells, into our lakes, into our waters? So I think the next challenge for the pharmaceutical industry will be to not just look at disease prevention or disease management in a given organ, but to look at the whole human being and maybe even the entire environment.
Mm-hmm. And what will be the profit in that for them? In it, so here we are in this capitalist society. How you know what puts somebody's feet to the fire on something like this? It's interesting. So lots of good news in this first segment. We're going to continue with that as we go forward. Water. I'm very interested in what's happening with water. So stay with us. And my guests, Dr. Reza Yavari and Dr. Paul Anastas, will be right back. I'm Faith Middleton. It's great to have you listening. It is a treat for me because my guests are Dr. Reza Yavari, who is a metabolic specialist. He's a Connecticut endocrinologist. He's been on the show many times. He's at Beyond Care in Madison and in Trumbull. Dr. Paul Anastas is here, and he is a Yale professor in seemingly all departments. He is known nationally as the father of green chemistry. He's served in the administrations of four United States presidents and was called in for the Deepwater Horizon spill, the BP spill that we all remember, to the nuclear meltdown in Japan the year before that. It's been quite a time. So we are talking about, he brings with him, this is like having a ray of sunshine in the environmental world walk in the door, because he brings lots of good news, and it's not a pose. This is real stuff. He would look at me quizzically if I said that to him as, you know, is this a positioning statement? No. There are so many great things that are happening. And Dr. Anastas, and Dr. Yavari, I wanted to say this to you too. Years ago, someone in the environmental movement said to me, we don't talk so much about the good things that have happened across the last two, three decades. I said, why not? And he said, well, there's been so much improvement. And I said, well, why wouldn't you talk about that? And he said, well, it would hurt fundraising. It would perhaps hurt membership in all these environmental organizations, and on it goes. What is lost with an attitude like that?
Oh, my goodness. Creativity, innovation, inventiveness, excitement. So I look back at how we think about environmental issues, and it's always telling you about what you should stop doing. You know, don't do this, ban this, control this, minimize that. Green chemistry is all about what you can create, what you can invent, what you can innovate. It's all about what you can do. And while I recognize as a person that's been at the Environmental Protection Agency, I consider it the greatest professional honor I ever had, that we need regulations. Regulations set a floor about which things you can't do any worse. It sort of sets a level. That's not creating a race to the top. That's not creating, it's a half of a strategy. So I think that, you know, optimism and creativity is really the only way to make our environmental and health movement autocatalytic.
Well, you can have that idea, this race to the top, and the inventors, you can hear the inventors saying, well, the market will sort that out later. The market will take care of whatever the problems might be. That's not for later. My job is to invent, to come up with something that's not been done before, or it's not necessarily to do it the right way. So can you parse that difference for me?
Absolutely. So, for instance, we wanted to, as chemists, wanted to make a dye that was blue, a certain shade of blue, or a plastic that was brittle or elastic. That's not what green chemistry wants. It wants to make a dye that's a certain shade of blue that doesn't cause cancer, a plastic that might be flexible or brittle but doesn't use additives that impair with our reproductive capability. So your job isn't done simply by focusing on a narrow definition of performance. It's achieving that performance without causing harm to ourselves or future generations or the earth.
And in this high-pressured corporate environment we're in, to what degree do company CEOs buy what you're talking about with that board pressure? You know, one tiny little tweak, one minuscule tweak means amazing jump in profits, you know, and it not necessarily for the better. Sometimes, yes, for the better, you know, but how do you get CEOs to understand this?
Yes.
And boards.
And again, I have to go to a favorite quote of mine from John F. Kennedy, which is, the great enemy of the truth is very often not the lie, but the myth. And the myth has been you can't have the quality of modern products and conveniences without toxics. And so what we're seeing is, instead of that eco-friendly and healthy things are going to perform worse and cost more, instead what green chemistry is showing, that they're going to perform better and cost less. So why are these companies, from basic chemical companies to cosmetic companies to energy companies, why are they doing it? Because they're making a lot of money off of doing it. Let me give you one example. Mm-hmm. President Clinton launched the Presidential Green Chemistry Challenge Awards in 1995. Those awards over the past 20 years, have shown all of these accomplishments, these achievements, these new products, not because they were regulated into doing it. It's because it made them more money, and it was good business.
Mm, here we go. So how do consumers figure into this equation? What can we do besides trusting the specific areas that you're mentioning? Cosmetics have gotten better. You've talked about toys, certain areas of raising food, so agribusiness. We're going to get to drinking water. But what do we do?
So I think more than anything else, knowing what you can demand, knowing that green chemistry is possible, and not just accepting that our products and the way that they're made are filled with toxics. So should we support companies that are actively pursuing this? Yes. So how do we do this? There was a program launched by the Environmental Protection Agency just a couple months ago with Administrator Gina McCarthy, a dear, dear friend and a great leader, called Safer Choice. The Safer Choice program is a label that's on various types of products, and that's an assurance that these are made using green chemistry. So supporting those, demanding those types of products is a very wise thing for every consumer to do.
The cynicism is so great now that when we see rollouts like the one you just mentioned, I think a lot of people say, oh, this is just posturing. This is because some election is coming. But I listen to you and I see how sincere the efforts are, how amazing these accomplishments are when you start to detail them for me. And I think, wow, that wasn't posing. That was real. How do we know?
So the wonderful thing about this program in particular is its transparency. So nothing is hidden behind the curtain. The criteria, the exact specifications, how you get that Safer Choice label is all very transparent, and it has to be documented. So there's no longer this mystery in these questions. You can be sure of what is being demanded of a Safer Choice product.
And you're telling me that the companies are not saying to themselves, okay, yes, we're willing to do this, but we're going to charge more because it's the Safer Choice or it's organic. Or if those products are on the shelf, the Safer Choice is not always the most expensive choice?
Oh, it's certainly not necessarily the more expensive product for the company. Can they make a greater profit off it? Perhaps. And that's kind of our market system. If they, but I honestly have to say, I've decided long ago that if somebody is to become incredibly wealthy by doing the right thing, I'm okay with that.
Mm. Okay, Dr. Paul Anastas, one of the things that we wanted to talk about, obesogens, and because this is like one of those buzzwords in medicine now, and it crosses over into chemistry and engineering where you are. And so, Dr. Yavari, you've talked about this on the show before. Quickly, can you tell us what these obesogens are?
Yeah, sure. I mean, obesogens are referred to chemicals, usually organic in nature, usually mimicking hormonal effects in the body that cause weight gain. We've seen in the last 15, 20, 30 years an explosion of pediatric obesity, and part of it is due to what our children are eating, but part of it is also due to the chemicals they're exposed to, including in the mom's womb during the pregnancy. These are gene modifiers. Paul, for example, has a slide that I really like a lot, that if you inject BPA, which is in plastic waters, bottled waters, into mice, the mice get obese for four generations in a row. The only way that that could happen is by modifying the mice genome. And therefore, that not only these chemicals act as hormonal endocrine disruptors, but they can also be gene modifiers. And a lot of them can be eliminated from the environment by doing what Paul preaches, which is green chemistry.
I'm just floating an idea, but what's the connection to other diseases? When something like this starts to become one of these buzzwords or buzz topics, everybody starts piling on and saying, you know, in my field, that could be obesogens causing that too. So to what degree is it true that we're certain at this point that it's looking like, this might, you know, I'm thinking about all these autoimmune diseases that we're seeing in people. Were they always there and we've just put a label on them? Or is something going on with obesogens and these autoimmune diseases?
Well, there is definitely a need for a lot more research, but the connection between the environment and the influence of these chemicals in our bodies, really the connection is the gut flora. What stays in our gut? As you know, we have tens of trillions of bacteria in our gut that do all kinds of good and bad if they're the wrong bacteria. And they're under the influence of what they're exposed to, antibiotics, preservatives. Chemicals kill the good bacteria while some of the bad ones survive. And these bacteria can do a lot of damage. They can cause heart disease, diabetes. Now there's a link between depression and the gut flora and perhaps more. So a lot of research is being done in this area, but I'm certain that the bacteria, and good and bad, are influenced by the chemicals in our environment.
We're not just talking here about running out and taking probiotics or prebiotics. It's not that simple.
Correct.
We're talking about something, a more holistic approach, right?
Correct.
Both of you would say.
Correct. And one point that I'd like to make is that our listeners should make sure that they don't ignore their basic health and instead go buy probiotics or go see a doctor for changing their gut flora, because, you know, if you haven't checked your cholesterol or your blood pressure, if you've never had a cardiac checkup, you may not, unfortunately, live long enough to benefit from the green chemistry and the environmental changes that we hope to make.
Let's open the phones. If you have a comment or a question for Dr. Paul Anastas, the Yale professor who served four U.S. presidents and is known as the father of green chemistry, and Dr. Ray Ziavari. The lines are open to you at 203-776-WNPR, 203-776-9677. Let's come back to water for a second. I think it might be one of the most dangerous substances that we're in contact with, and yet we can't live without it. Is there something positive going on in terms of water? We've seen a change in the containers for water in terms of those plastic bottles. But what about the water itself?
Yes, there's so many interesting things. And I have to look right up the street to Yale University that actually in Professor Zimmerman's lab, they're coming up with these new and creative ways of using this substance called chitin. Now, for your listeners, chitin is one of the most plentiful materials made in nature. It's the shells of shrimp, of insects, of different kinds of shellfish. And in her labs, they've developed a way of using this dirt cheap material to remove things like arsenic and selenium and other types of heavy metals that are toxic and are of concern. So this is a wonderful way of using green chemistry and more appropriately green engineering to deal with these legacy historical problems and clean up things that have happened in the past.
Oh, that's exciting. When you start to hear about these things, I bet if we did this across these research universities and in various companies and small workshops, the future does look bright. We begin to see why people are excited and not just cynical. So that's what's so so exciting about what you're talking about. So, in terms of the chemicals that end up in our drinking water, that polluted stew that is so scary when you hear about it, what these common everyday water filters don't seem to take out those. What can be done? What are you looking at that's...
So there's certainly combinations of water treatment that that can be done to try to remove the pollutants, some of the osmosis types of approaches. There's actually an approach by Professor Ella Mellick on what's called forward osmosis, which is very helpful. Coupling that with some of the traditional activated carbon filters. Those can get at some of the organics.
So both osmosis and carbon filters will get at a lot of the pharmaceuticals and chemicals that are in the water.
So, the most important aspect is, why are those substances in our water in the first place? It's because we've designed them not to break down, as most natural things do. So I often tell my colleagues, it's okay if they want to aspire to immortality, but don't impart that immortality on the chemicals that you make. And so how do we design our chemicals so that they actually degrade the way natural substances degrade? And that's a big part of what green chemistry is all about.
Okay, we're going to take a short break, and then we'd love to hear from you. 203-776-WNPR. Are you excited? Are you more positive? Are you less cynical as you listen to this? Stay with us. We'll come back in a sec. Faith Middleton, thanks so much to our producers, senior producer Lori Mack and producer Jonathan McNichol. My guest, Dr. Paul Anastas, a Yale professor in many, many departments, and is known as the father of green chemistry. He has served 4 U.S. presidents, was called in for the BP Deepwater Horizon spill. Also, the year before that, to the nuclear meltdown in Japan, had to make harrowing decisions in those two areas, and is hard at work helping to invent and encourage people to invent things that are less dangerous to us and this planet. It is very exciting to hear about these things. We're going to take a call, and then I would like to hear about your idea on water splitting, which is not just an idea, but a real thing. Jane, Faith Middleton and the gang, welcome to the show. Are you there, Jane? Oh, did we lose her? I'm so sorry, Jane. Please call back. 203-776-WNPR. Water splitting. What are you doing with that?
So there's this challenge about that starts with energy. And it says, how do you store energy, like from solar when the sun's not shining or windmills when the wind's not blowing? And part of it has been you can split water. You can split water into hydrogen and oxygen, and you can store the hydrogen for when you need it. The nice thing about this is when you need the energy from the hydrogen and you combust it to get the energy, the product that you get is pure water. So you get the water, you get purified water back, and the nice thing about it as well is this works with salt water, with seawater. So it's a way of storing energy and also of purifying water.
Serving, it's like solves many problems all at once. Except when you say purified water, it's been hit with hydrogen, right?
No, so the water, the H2O is split into the hydrogen
leaves,
and oxygen.
Leaves hydrogen.
Right.
So the water you get as a result is as pure as it gets. In other words, not necessarily good for us, right?
That it is ultra pure. Yeah, that's correct.
There's not a thing in it.
Right. There's just hydrogen and oxygen.
And that's we get so many trace minerals and things from clean water.
Which are essential, right.
So the game will be in the future perhaps putting them back in again after you've gotten this purified water?
And as a matter of fact, that's really something that's done with much of the bottled water, that they ultra-purify water and then add in the necessary minerals.
Are you saying then that the bottled water is cleaner than the tap water?
In many cases, that's true.
And then they add the trace minerals back in again?
Correct.
And so it depends on the container it's in, or whether that container's been in the sun,
et cetera, et cetera. So the problems with the containers is something that shouldn't be ignored, because there's been plenty of historical problems with the additives from these plastic water bottles, and certainly also the plastic baby bottles containing this BPA, bisphenol A, which is a major endocrine disruptor of concern.
Well, you just sold a lot of bottled water. I don't know if that's good news to you. Mike, Faith Middleton with Dr. Yavari and Dr. Anastas. Go ahead.
Oh, hello. Thank you for taking my call. My question is, how can we trust these companies to do the right thing, even though they're saying that they're being green, and maybe they'll just remove one issue and keep the rest and make a humongous profit off of it because the label is now green? And I think, from my own opinion, that the best invention is to reinvent yourself and start eating healthy and getting rid of a lot of the things that are toxic for your family at your home.
Mike, thank you so much for your comment. I know you're not alone in wondering about this. We certainly have seen this in some companies that might just clean up one piece of the business and not the rest. We've certainly seen that happen. It's not a crazy idea. We've seen some other companies that are really gone whole hog on this and really mean it. So, Dr. Anastas, what do you think? Thank you, Mike.
Mike, I think that's a great question, and you make a great point, and I completely support you eating healthy food. I'd say that the big point about the companies is absolutely that you should not leave this to trust. I'm a tremendous believer in transparency, and any company that is genuinely serious about changing to healthier, greener chemistry, chemicals, needs to also be transparent about what is in their products and how they are made. So every consumer should demand transparency. And quite frankly, if a company is not willing to be transparent, it should leave you with some serious questions.
And what is the label from Environmental Protection that's being issued now? Is it Safer Choice?
Safer Choice.
Safer Choice. Dr. Yavari, if you had to say to all of us, three things that each of us could do in terms of these obesogens, exposure to chemicals, what would be three top things that would have the largest, in a kind of public health model, the largest effect on each of us?
Well, number one would be to stay informed, to know about the latest findings and to pursue it in a committed, engaged way. Number two, I think, would be to eat healthy, real food, a variety of different foods that provide different nutrients, different bacteria in our to our body. And I think number three really goes back to being positive and staying lean and exercising. We know that excess body fat is harmful directly, and it's also a storage depot for a lot of these chemicals that are fat soluble. In general, the basic dogma of health, knowledge, healthy eating, and exercise, and being positive.
And Faith Middleton and company, welcome to the show. Wow. So we don't know. I hope that's not on our end because, we just had a call coming through. Ann, I'm sorry if we've missed you now. Embarrassing when this happens. 203-776-WNPR. Jonathan McNichol is going to be looking at that to see if it's some kind of weird problem on our end. I hope not. I don't know how to explain that the other call got through. When you were talking about eating real food, you know, foods that aren't loaded with the way farm families used to eat, do you care if it's organic or not?
Well, if it's, I do care, but there are limits to it. There are certain foods that are not healthy because they're loaded with preservatives, antibiotics, chemicals, and I think it's important to avoid those foods. But overall, I prefer homegrown. If you can have your own garden and grow your own vegetables, if you can buy your meat products from a local farm, if you produce a lot of your own ingredients, such as there's now a trend of making fermented foods of your own so that you can use them year-round, I think that's the way to go, to really learn the nature of good food.
So let's say that people read about that and they wish they could do it, but because of life circumstances, impossible. I'm not going to be churning my own butter or I don't have time to have a little farm in my yard. I wish I did. I love farm stands and do all that. But some of this is realistic and some of it is not. So what do we do?
Well, we have to stay engaged. I mean, our dear friend Jacques Pepin, the famous chef, he says always that 30 years ago, he couldn't find anything decent, no good vegetables, nothing really great directly from a farm. And now we have plenty of good food. In fact, I think the state of vegetables and meat products in our country has been the best I've ever remembered. So I think we've made a lot of progress. And now, you know, we have friends like Michel Nichan, who have a nationwide effort to bring farm products to people, communities who are underprivileged, and he's had a lot of success with that. So we are making progress. And I think the flip side of it is you also want to educate people to avoid foods that are loaded with preservatives and trans fats and antibiotics, who are really, by nature, unhealthy. They're toxic.
Yes, and we see programs, thanks to people like Michel Nichan, where they're doubling what we used to call food stamps, SNAP, at the farmers markets in neighborhoods that are low-resource neighborhoods, so where there's some poverty. And so we're seeing multiple approaches on this. It's pretty exciting. And Faith Middleton, welcome to the show. Sorry you were cut off, Anne.
Oh, that's okay. Hi, Faith. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
And thank you for this great conversation.
You're welcome.
I'm Anne Hewlett, and I coordinate the Coalition for Safe and Healthy Connecticut. Hi, Paul.
Hello, Anne. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Great, thanks.
Faith, again, thank you so much for this very important conversation. I just wanted to make a comment, actually, to thank your guests. We are a coalition of very diverse groups, professional health groups, nurses, scientists, physicians, working across the state to raise awareness on the issues that your guests have raised today, and to try to pass more health protective policies at the state and federal level. So we were the group, for example, that worked to ban BPA in Connecticut in recyclable containers. And I just wanted to put a plug in for Dr. Anastas and his green chemistry work. I think we have real opportunities in, certainly in Connecticut as well as other states, to not only make better choices as consumers thanks to the programs that you've identified out of the EPA, but also to push our state government to move towards more sustainable purchasing, and then that can leverage big shifts in the marketplace for less toxic products.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Yeah, and actually, Paul has been a real leader in that conversation and really helping us to think, how do you advance a policy or set up a framework where you're not just substituting one chemical that's harmful for potentially another? And how do we use this initiative, as Paul was saying, to really drive green chemistry innovation, both in companies and through consumer demand and policy structures that support that type of innovation.
Well, so, Anne, thank you so much for calling and raising these topics. And also to you and your colleagues, thank you so much for the work you do. I know your organization, and I respect it so much. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Faith.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Our number 203-776-WNPR. So how, Dr. Anastas and Dr. Ibarri, how optimistic are you?
So I call myself a strategic optimist. It's not that I think everything just simply will be okay. I think that everything can be okay if we do the right things. So it's not a question in my mind about whether it's possible to do away with these egregiously toxic substances that are in all of our products and everything that we do. It's that if we take the right action, if we have the will to do it and to demand it, then I'm absolutely optimistic that we're able to achieve it.
Myself as a physician, I have to be positive and I have to be an optimist. When I look back at the progress we've made just in the last 10 years in our understanding of a lot of the topics we're talking about, when I look at, as a diabetologist, the range of medical options that I have now to treat people, when I look at the fact that we are ending or at least slowing down the rate of childhood obesity, it makes me happy. And I'm hopeful that in the next 10 years, some of the conversation we're having now will be implemented into good practice of medicine.
Well, Dr. Ivari, the last time you were on the show and we were having a conversation, I understand, Dr. Anastas, you almost called in because there was a caller on the line saying, you know, this is so hard, it's impossible, this is very difficult. And you were trying to address the joy, I think.
Exactly. I recognize that sometimes the challenges of changing habits and whether it's eating better or lifestyle choices, you can go through a period where it's a little challenging. But I think that what Dr. Ivari has shown and what he illustrates is that when you get through that valley, through that period, the joy, the satisfaction, the energy, the outlook on the other side is worth striving for. And so I think if we focus more on that joy, then we'd be willing to go through that valley.
Didn't I say it's like the sun coming into the room, these two? Bob, go ahead as quickly as you can, please. Thanks, Bob.
I'd like to address water. If you have a good carbon block filter with a 1 micron or better filter system, it will eliminate almost all of the carcinogens that there are. And what your previous speaker said about drugs, it's imperative that we get them out of the water system. There's been research done in Canada showing the enormous impact it has on people's health. And if I may, one last thing. In North Haven, as in many other towns, there are many environmental projects that are being developed, but they need support and funding from the state and the towns. Thank you very much.
Bob, can I ask you a quick question?
Yes.
When you talk about that carbon block plus a 1 micron filter, are you talking about a system that a company comes and puts in on your faucets or on your water tank, or are you talking about something that you purchase?
I'm talking about both of those possibilities and a whole house filter system. And I've used one in Hamden for 15, 25 years, something like that. And the difference in the taste and the joy of drinking a purified glass of water is really outstanding.
Okay, thanks so much. I'm glad you called. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Have a pleasant day.
All right, you too. So in terms of seeing the battle right now, it is a very difficult time in terms of funding. We're in the midst of a presidential election, as you well know. How do we keep our counsel here during these what are going to be rocky times, already rocky?
So I guess from my perspective is that when we are talking about designing things differently, how we design tomorrow so that it looks different and better than today, while we focus on funding, it doesn't cost a penny to change your mind. Doesn't cost a penny to change your perspective. And if you bring a new level of awareness to design, then you can wind up in a vastly better place than we are right now.
Uh-huh.
So I have two little daughters, 5 and 8, and I design with them in mind.
I love that. Thank you both very much, Dr. Paul Anastas of Yale University, the father of green chemistry, as he is known, and Dr. Razi Ivari of Beyond Care in Madison, Connecticut, a metabolic specialist. We have quite the conversation going on Facebook right now. Go to Faith Middleton Food Schmooze because we're getting you all set for Thanksgiving, and we've got a Jacques Pepin incredible thing up there. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.